Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Whoa. Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Jamal Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 17. NASDAQ Futures down 324. Kind of the U-turn of yesterday, which is a little strange, but that is what has happened. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do. I don't know why you think it's strange.
Well, it's just the up one day, down the next is, at a rate of 1%. I mean, since we went like years without a 1% move, it's historically strange. It's not strange in the last 3 weeks, let's put it that way.
Well, I was going to say, that really cool-looking shooting star that Micron left in the chart a little while ago at 1255.
While we're on that subject...
It sucks to be you if you bought that, by the way.
Oh, without a doubt, 1200?
From 1255, was trading at 94.
Well, 931, 91. Down 53 bucks. Why is
it down big this morning? Yeah.
Why every day that Microsoft, Apple, Meta are up, we got Micron, Nvidia, AMD all down. You've explained it sort of before, but I think everybody probably could use it again. What's the flip there? One's the buyer and one's the seller of the stuff.
Well. No, here's the... So you've... And any bubble always has things that lead it, right? So, I mean, that's just... You know, it's just the way it is. When... during the internet craze, there was a rotation of things that were going to save the day. Okay? There were the original ones that were, you know, were the reason that everybody was cheering and, oh, boy, you know, everything's fabulous and this and that. But then, as things age a little bit, people start thinking about it and go, well, how does this, you know, how's the air stay in the balloon, so to speak, right? I guess that's one way to put it. So what ends up happening is you get this rotation. Now, the side effect, and I noted this as we came into the last phase of this insanity in the fall, is that when you start stockpiling stuff without actually having a profitable market for it, which of course Nvidia has been doing now for the last couple of years, you eventually start to run into supply chain constraints, because the wise person who's been through this cycle in the business more than once, and by the way, that's all the memory companies.
Why wise person or old person or both?
Well, I guess there's some argument to be made there, right?
I'm looking in the mirror here. I'm not necessarily accusing you.
I'm saying, you know, maybe you're one or the other, right? And maybe sometimes you're both.
I think your point is, unless you actually see it, somebody tells you about it, it's not the same thing.
Well, yes and no. The thing is that the companies that have gotten the biggest beneficiaries in this last thrust, and Micron certainly is among them, are firms that have been around long enough and have been through enough of these cycles that this is not their first rodeo. All right.
Well, Micron went from 95 to 6 in the 2001.
Yeah, and they've, like I said, they've been down, they've seen this movie, and they know how it ends. And so they're going to sit. Well, the reality is that the memory chips, the strips that go in my desktop PC here, went from $100 to $500. All right. same ones. We're not talking about Next Generation or any of this nonsense. The very same strips.
Each strip is how many thing of RAM?
Well, it depends on which ones you buy.
Okay,
they're available in different capacities. The ones that I have in my computer are 16 gigabyte. So two of and there's two of them in there, so it's 32. But you buy them in pairs generally, and the reason is that modern motherboards, they have two channels, the consumer ones and light, I guess you can call them light industrial, like the kind you'd buy for your office, okay? Which is not really consumer, but kind of, it's all kind of the same thing. Anyway, most of them have two channels. When you get into some of the heavier, bigger server systems, they have more than that. But most of your processors are dual channel. So if you have a board that takes two processors, for example, you might have four channels, okay? So you might have four sets of slots. But typically the advice is you populate them a channel at a time.
All right, so for the, I won't say Luddite, for the layman like me, right. I go in and I buy a refurb computer because I just want to use it for my emails or something, keep it away from the quotes.
Right.
And they go, okay, it's got X of RAM, and I go, why don't you give me a little more? For a little more, that used to cost me 100, then it got to be 500.
Exactly. And so the memory,
and they would put, they would put a chip in there, and that would be my RAM.
Well, they put two strips in. In modern machines, you would add them in pairs. Okay, so if you added, if you went from 32 gigabytes to 64 gigabytes, it would be two strips. You wouldn't put two 32. Although you could take the two 16s out and put two 32s in. All right, assuming that the board can handle the larger size, which in some cases they can. But processors have a maximum.
All right, so this is the Luddite would know it that way. And you said that went from 100 to 500. Now it's coming back down a little bit.
Now it's, well, it's, yeah. And the same thing occurred with storage, which is really kind of weird because there's two kinds of storage nowadays. There's bulk storage, which is your what you think of as a hard disk, what I thought of as a hard disk, and what we all bought as hard disks, okay, for a long time. They're actually spinning devices, okay? So it's essentially rust on a on a platter, on a set of platters. And now those have not started coming down yet. But those went crazy too. Those have more than doubled. The 20 terabyte drives were in the neighborhood of $400, $390, $400 back in like November, and I'm looking at it right now, and there's 700. Okay, so those have shot the moon as well. And the sticks, which are the solid state disks, are much faster. And that's what you would typically use for your if you're going to build a computer for your internal storage. Those have become absolutely stupid. Okay, now those have gone from stupendous to just retarded. All right, so for example, a 1 terabyte SSD, a stick disk, if you will, NVMe. Those were a little over $100 last fall, and they got up into the $300 and $400 range. Which I mean, that you're talking about hair on fire kind.
You're talking about the things you stick in a computer to move stuff to another computer or whatever.
No, this is the permanent storage. So
okay.
It used to be that they were rotating disks, but those are very slow compared to the ones that are essentially all on a chip. Okay, and all your modern motherboards, whether they are in a desktop or in a laptop, have it looks like an elongated stick. Okay, they're about an inch wide, and they come in different lengths, but the most common ones are called 2280s, and that's the length of millimeters. So it's a rectangle, okay, and it plugs into the board as a connector on one end, and those went up in a factor of 4 to 5 in price as well. All right, now they're now down to only about double what they were. So they went from being obscenely expensive to now just being stupidly expensive. But this is you know, demand destruction is a thing, okay, Chief?
I mean, yeah. Well,
all right, and that's what you saw here is that, you know, I'm sitting here saying, well, you know, I do video processing because I do podcasts and stuff like this, and so I use Resolve for that, and I have a GPU card in my box. I bought it before the craziness started. I would not buy one today because they're three times the price of what they were before then. And I have enough storage in there. But if I was looking to upgrade, I would not do it, with prices where they are today. And that, why? Because you know, at that kind of a price, unless I absolutely have to, it's not going to happen. And the same thing, by the way, is true. I mean, you know, think about the person who comes into, you go to hire somebody, you go to, pretty much every job today requires a computer on a desk. And, you know, and the machine that was going to be fairly pedestrian with a, you know, kind of okay monitor and whatever, you know, was a $1,500 piece of equipment, all of a sudden it's $3,000.
Well, just as a way where these numbers have gone, a couple of examples for today. We started out, and Carl, you and I lab these numbers out there. It's not like anybody can trade on them. It's just, it's information that somehow you got to get a grasp, try and get a grasp of what the hell's happened in the last, when I say recently, 10, 15 years is pretty recent, right? I mean, it isn't if you're 5 years old, obviously, but what we're talking about in Micron today, Carl was mentioning, what did you say, 1255 or something was the high?
And now that was a spike high, but yeah.
Okay, so it's 9:30. So let's be nice and say $300.
Right.
How many shares do you think they have outstanding?
Oh, God. Well, I could look it up.
1.1 billion.
Okay.
So we're talking $330 billion.
That's real money.
In a week.
One company.
I bought on the way up and on the way down. Now, here I took the liberty here. Of AI, what were the highest market cap stocks in 2010? Which is not, this is a message on where the money is going and where the values are, and how, if you're still thinking like I am in 15 years ago money, you're a chump. I mean, first of all, name me the top five highest valued stocks in 2010. I'll give you a clue. The first one was $314 billion. So the biggest stock in the world was worth the move that Micron's made in the last 4 days or last
week.
Yeah,
that's not a shock.
But it's not a shock to you and me, but it's incredible in terms of what the money is worth nothing.
Well, careful with that.
Well, I mean, you want to have it, obviously.
I
mean,
no, I'm just saying careful with that, okay, because you take a look at, for example, Intel. All right, 3/31/2025. The market cap of Intel was $99 billion, basically $100 billion. Okay, there. By the way, there it essentially sat. Incidentally, next quarter was 98.
AMD sat for 5 hours for 30 years, but
okay. As of yesterday. That very same company was 604 in market cap.
Well, and I'm trying to lab one in here from the everyman's perspective.
By the way, its trailing PE is 904.
Well, the part PE is very good to look at. I always look at price revenue per share. You can't hide on that
price
one.
Price for sales is only 10.5.
Well, that's not horrible. I mean, compared to these other ones, what's Micron? 25.
It was 1.8.
Micron makes is $51 a share as a revenue. So do the math.
My entire point of that, though, Chief, is that people say, well, you know, look at all that wealth. And my answer is no. Look at that big number on a piece of paper.
Yep.
Because the precept that all of a sudden a dollar of sales is worth five times what it was. Sold to you, buddy, because unless you sell it here, which, because it's going to go up more, nobody does, right? unless you sell it here, that isn't money.
Well, in 2000, when these stacks...
By the way, you don't have to pay taxes on it until you sell it either.
Well, these stacks in 2000, 2001, the ones that had the huge crash over, the Cisco's, the Oracle, most of those got to about 11 times revenue, which was all they could stand. And now we've got stuff that was 20, 25, 30. It's way more expensive in that terms. But here's how... I'll flip it down to an everyday... Well, not everyday, but... I'm driving in this morning, minding my own business, and they're talking about the Uptown Theater. Did you ever, you know where that is? We were in Chicago for a while.
Not that specific one.
Well, I probably do. I'll give you a clue. It's Uptown.
Well, duh!
But it's this old line, incredible building, architecture, all that kind of crap. And I know a lot of, I know somewhat about it because right next to my grandmother lived on the south side. A block away was the Southtown Theater, which was a theater, but it was a theater like none ever you ever walked into. Big aquariums, massive artistry, huge staircase, stuff that you would expect for, like, Carnegie Hall, for God's sake. So they were like two sister places. Well, that one.
I was going to say they all. That was all the stuff.
Well, there were regular movie theaters too that were like storefronts, but like.
Oh
the,
no, I get that. But when we built real things, yeah.
It's sort of like the Chicago Theater downtown. You mean you wouldn't build that today, or the Oriental, or those kinds of things?
Right.
So the Southtown's long gone. Well, this guy, some people were trying to renovate it and make it like new and do stuff in there and back to having plays and things. And the guy said, "Well, how much is it going to cost to get it back to where it was?" Guess what the number is?
I don't even have a clue.
I would have thought on the high end, $20 million. It's 160.
Yeah.
How the hell? How do you put $160 million into a building? For God's sake, that's already there. I mean, what would that number have been 20 years ago? Not even. I mean, this inflation is off to the moon on this. I mean, it's mind boggling.
Okay, but. Recognize something here. It is and it's not. Yes, it is if people are crazy enough to spend that, okay? But, again, demand destruction is real, and the idea that these kinds of things are sustainable and maintainable and therefore there's an investment thesis that works in this kind of a world. Investment, not speculation. Investment.
Yeah, well, they seem to blur sometimes, don't they?
Well, they're not the same thing, okay? And you are seeing the latest. It looks like some people are waking up to the scam with NVIDIA and the circular financing crap. The latest thing out of them that I saw the other day, and I was like, oh God, how come it? You know, this is what we get for a holiday. I don't get to be on Stocks and Jocks on Friday.
Yeah. Well, okay, I missed you. I mean, we got to go over those labor numbers again because we kind of short shafted them a little on Thursday.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But by the way, that was a terrible report.
That's what I'm saying. It's worse than we. I went over it again after
It's horrible.
We know we didn't mention. We'll do it our second segment here. It has to do with I can't believe the participation number. We forgot to mention that. That's horrible.
But it matches exactly, that 3 million I've talked about, the population adjusted number. It happens to align there. When you see two things in it from different data sources that align in the same place, you're probably looking at something that's real. Okay. The thing that's interesting that NVIDIA has started doing now is they apparently have a whole lot of product they can't sell. And so now their latest scheme is, if you're a startup company, you can give us a piece of revenue for essentially time sharing on our cluster of stuff.
Wow.
Excuse me. That is like another step beyond what blew Lucent into little itty bitty pieces. They were just
these are never new tricks, are they? They've all been done before.
Well, when I saw this, I was like, okay, now we're into grenade swallowing territory here, okay? So, I am, and people are, I think, starting to kind of get the idea that, hey, wait a minute, there's a problem. Okay. Now you have this other thing in the AI space, and I predicted this was going to happen, and now it's starting to show up as well. There's just little rumblings of it so far. And that is, people have figured out how to collapse the size, space, and cost of these models. Now, the basic issue that you have with them when somebody else owns it, and you're trying to play cloud computer with an AI model, is that the prime directive of the machine is to consume your money. It is not to provide answers to your questions. And this is easily discerned by the fact that it does not hallucinate. It fills your request. People say it's hallucinating. It's not. It's fulfilling its programming. Its programming, it requires it to do that, because if it doesn't, you won't pay. And so if it has, you ask it to synthesize 15 pieces of information and it's got 14 of them, it's going to make the 15th one up. And that's because if it doesn't, but says I can't answer the query, there's no revenue. All right? So you're never going to see that happen. And the fact, and by the way, it knows instantly that it is missing that 15th piece. Doesn't have to do an exhaustive search. It knows it's not there. And if you want an example of this from the simple database style, all you got to do is go on my system, go into the search box, and put in a word in the message contains field that doesn't exist. And within one 1/1000th of a second, you're going to get an answer back with the time and the query on the bottom. My system actually shows that to everybody. Okay, how much processing did I do to display this page? It's going to come back instantly and tell you there's nothing there. That's because a binary search in that kind of a circumstance knows immediately, doesn't have to do much work at all, that what it's looking for, it cannot find. The problem is that if it does that, if the AI, as soon as it does its first level scan of things to see, okay, what do I got? And then it starts synthesizing. One of those things is missing. It knows it can't answer the question. If it tells you that, it doesn't get paid. And so,
well, there you go.
People say it hallucinates. It does not hallucinate. It follows. There's never been an instance.
It's like a doctor who knows he can't cure you, but he gives you a prescription anyway.
Chief, he knows he can't solve the problem, but if he tells you that, you don't pay him.
Hey, Well, before Joel hops on, can you name those five stocks? I teased that one out there, and it's bad radio.
No, I would have to go back and actually look them up.
If I gave you the answer, of course you. I bet you get a couple of them. 2010, not 2000.
2010.
One on here is a surprise. I gave you number one. Exxon at 314.
Okay.
Next, at Microsoft 260.
Yeah.
Apple 210, Walmart 210, and Berkshire Hathaway 201. I would not have guessed them.
I'm not that surprised at Berkshire. Out of the panoply of 500 stocks, I wouldn't have guessed them, right? But
that's what I mean. I knew they were a bunch. I wouldn't have plugged them in the top five. I don't know who else I'd have had in here, but.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, this is the chief. When you look at the fundamental driving force of this, we all say inflation, because that's what you see at the grocery store, okay? But the driving force behind these expansions is a secular downward trend in interest rates, which means I don't ever have to pay off whatever it is that I borrow. That allows me to compound my leverage, and therefore my PEs and my price to sales go up. The problem is that is a secular trend, and it's over. It's reversed.
Right, and you should listen to me once in a while when I say, when something like that happens, as it did in 1980, it takes a long time for people
to recognize it. That's absolutely right. Now, the problem is, if you want to take a look at some of the other places where this has happened through history, and this 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 is not just a current world phenomenon.
Oh, no, no, absolutely not.
Okay. By the way, one of those inflection points was in 1920-21. Gee, what happened there? There was another one coming into the 1873 crash.
Yep.
Okay, and a long depression. Guess when the bottom was that led to the upward start that topped out in 1981-82?
The bottom?
Yeah, take a
It started in 1968 with the Bretton Woods.
Wrong. Okay. 1944.
How about that?
I do.
Okay. Well, I'm from the... Now,
wait a minute. Remember that just because a secular trend has changed doesn't mean that it's a straight line. It's not. In the 1981-82 top, okay, in those longer-term rates, that longer-term trend, had plenty of counter-trend moves. That was how I bought an awful lot of stuff very cheap, including rent building downtown.
Well, there's a difference between that and the regular number, the 30-year number.
No. What I'm talking about is the general secular trend in interest rates, not just one bond or one number or what the general.
Well, yeah, because they were very low through, but the 50s and 60s, your growth number was really high,
right?
Your real growth number,
yeah.
Which, you know, yeah. We're to the point where every part of society pretty much benefited. I mean, almost exactly evenly, by the way.
Well, but by the way, the Federal Reserve engaged in a great deal of repression. Operation Twist was invented during that time. Okay. But nonetheless, the general trend was from the lower left to the upper right. And the way that you made money coming in during that period of time was cash on cash return, because if you tried to lever into it, and that was the game that you played, when the time came to roll, the cost of financing
was a little different. But I have something else I want to.
But
point
it
out.
Was typically higher.
But when you see Joel, let me know. The 50s and 60s, and really maybe into the early 70s. 50s and 60s, it was a phenomenon. I mean, if we live 200 more years and go back, it was a phenomenon unlike really any other, almost in recorded history, because you had interest rates, and mortgage rates were 6. Okay, so they were pretty steady. Your risk-free rate was about 3.25, which you could go to the savings loan, put in, and you'd get that money. Not many people were in the market. There was no 401ks. But in general, the average person... Inflation was around 2%, and people's income was going up probably 3.
Yeah,
which is or 3.5. So it was tremendous real growth, which we probably really haven't seen almost since then, in the sense of hourly earnings, those kinds of things, bumping along. I mean, every year, pretty much everybody felt that next year was going to be a better year. The psychology,
and it typically was.
I mean, you didn't want to get sick. I mean, in those days, you sure as hell didn't want to have a cavity. Didn't yank your tooth. I mean, there's a lot of reasons not to be alive during the '60s. But by and large, the growth was pretty dramatic. And if you got the J word, meaning job, no matter where it wasn't like you were going to get rich. But that covered your basic necessities. I mean, I knew. Couple people, my buddy's dads were the produce managers in the Jewel, and they had a bungalow, they had a house, a car that was pretty bare bones, but they had a car, and the kids went to Catholic school.
By the way, Joel's up.
Okay,
so,
we'll see you. We'll talk to you in a little bit.
All right,
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing today?
All right. So, did you stand outside somewhere and watch the soccer game last night, or what'd you do? Like, did you have those big watch parties near you?
No.
Take that as a no.
I had a college friend visiting, so I went out to dinner in Ann Arbor. I'm not a huge soccer fan. And
me neither. So
a little bit even less of a soccer fan now after that drubbing last night. Absolute drubbing. I got home in time to see the third and fourth goals, but just, boy, oh boy, what an embarrassment.
Belgium's a good team.
Yeah, Belgium's a good team, and I don't even know who to root for. Who you root for?
Oh, I don't. I mean, I'm just watching them. I don't know that much about soccer. I think a lot of times it's I can't say it's boring because people say baseball is boring, but it seems some games. I watched the Mexico Britain game, and I really thought that was an amazing game to watch. It was action the whole way. Then I watched Argentina, or the France game, and it was a half and a half before France put a ball on net, and then they ended up winning by one penalty kick that was kind of creepy. I mean, there was this idea that we got the better team, we'll just play around for a half, but we can turn it on whenever we want. I mean, it looks like, it reminds me of basketball when you split a four corners.
Yeah. Going back a long way there, Chief.
Well, I'll say basketball before a shot clock.
Yep. I will say, you know, just incredible athletes.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know. It's... It's incredible.
Well, you're at the top of the gene pool, and you've been trained your whole life. I mean, it's like any other sport. I mean, to think those people are like you is just not, it's not true.
Yep.
I mean, it just isn't. I mean, you watch a shortstop go back in a hole and grab one and throw to first base. There aren't 50 people on earth that could have made that play, right?
Yeah.
Same way as soccer. I mean, you know, these guys are that fast and that good. You know, it is interesting, though, as I watch the... First game I watched Norway, just happened to be in, and I see this guy in Norway, and I'm going, where the hell did he come from? You know, that big guy, I don't know where his name is.
He's a character.
But I'm looking at him going, wait a minute, this guy's 30 pounds heavier than the rest of the guys, and oh, by the way, he's just as fast. This guy's a man among boys, and it is, he is. It kind of tied in with, I probably mentioned this a couple weeks ago, somebody did this, one of these Core Digest things, and people go, how the hell could Babe Ruth be that good when... God, he's like this fat guy, you know, basically.
Yeah.
And so somebody dug out a picture of Babe Ruth when he first came up. And he's standing there. And the guy goes, the dude was 6'1", maybe a little taller. He's 215 pounds of solid rock. Everybody else is 5'10", 165 or 70. He was that much stronger, that much bigger. And he was just as fast, and he had a great arm. Duh. Right? I mean, a lot of people don't have any conception of how... I mean, if you're an Adrian Dantley or an Austin Carr, these are people I saw play. If you're 6'2", and all of a sudden you're 15, 20 pounds heavier than somebody else, and it's all muscle, whenever you move, everybody else scatters. You know, you get a real feel of this, and I'll shut up, we'll talk about the market. Did you ever go watch a Golden Gloves boxing thing?
Yeah.
Well, it's stunning when you see the person walk by who's 125 pounds and there's not an ounce of fat on him. Then you see a guy walk by who's 140 pounds without a fancy item, an ounce of fat on him. How much bigger he is than the guy who's 125.
Yeah.
I mean, that 15, 20 pounds of bone and muscle and that flabbo is an amazing difference in size of a human being. I mean, if somebody's 220 and they're ripped versus somebody 175, they better not go near him. You know, unless you're kung fu. I mean, it's a big difference. Anyway, what do you make of this market? What do you make of, Carl and I were talking about Micron down 300 points from its high. That's a lot. I mean, it was run up that fast, but it ran down that fast. That number is more money than the biggest stock was worth in 2010. Just the move in the last week in Micron. How do you get your hands around these numbers, Joe? I'm in trouble.
I can't. And then... I am just the rotation here in this market is just violent.
Yep.
And the money it's so direct, they are coming out of some of these stocks, as Micron and SanDisk, and they are putting money in the financials. Software is up today. I'm looking at the staples. I'm looking at the drugs. I mean, You would never think, I'm looking at the S&P here, you would never think we were down 17 handles, but you have Micron, you know, and they're blaming Samsung, you know, for the cap S spend. I mean, you have that. You have Apple up $2.50, Microsoft up $6. I mean, SanDisk down 106, Micron down 62. I mean, it is just a. We are so far from a sell everything market that it's. I'm just like my jaw, like when I pull up, you know, my heat map this morning and pull it up, my jaw hit the floor. This market is just, it's just amazing.
Well,
and
you've got, it's
I'm flabbergasted.
I am too, but you know what? Kind of don't be. I mean, when I say don't be, your first blush is you're amazingly flabbergasted, but I was just, you know, I talked to Carl last week about it. It is so similar to me when the rally started in 1982. I mean, interest rates had already started to come back down, but the mentality is we're not putting any money in the market. We've lost money there for 15 years. What are you doing? What are you telling? Only an idiot would put money in the market in August of 82. We've gone up pretty much every year since then. But now, if you have a you know, I have a lot of clients. If I was smart enough to say to a client with Micron, boy, if 120 is a little high, I mean, 1250 is a little high, the first question out of their mouth was, okay, where are we going to put it? Unless you can find me another stock you want me to buy, I don't want to sell it. Well, that's exactly what you're describing, Joel. I mean, at some point we might reach the area where if interest rates go to 8, you want to sell something, but you want to wait a while to buy it. I mean, right? You don't necessarily, but right now, everybody has got this, I've got to be all in mentality, or a lot of people do. Because, you know, that's the only way you make money is being in the market. So, okay, yeah, my NVIDIA at 210 was too high. Okay, what are we going to do with it? I don't want anything in cash. Well, that's why, one of the reasons I think you're seeing some of these rotations, but I mean, I have no clue as to why Micron coming down $300 means that at Home Depot's up, yet it is.
Yes.
And why Goldman Sachs is up, but it is. I mean, I don't get the connection there. Do you?
It's just rotation, yeah. And it's just rebalancing. You know, of the, you know, in the ETFs. You know, if they're selling something, they're buying something else. I don't know how long it can persist, and I don't know what, you know, what the catalyst is going to be. But the resiliency of the, you know, to sell, you know, just not a sell everything market. I mean, you almost think like it's never going to happen again. And when you start thinking like that, it can be pretty dangerous.
Can you explain to me, and Carl's still listening, the one I find the most fascinating on the page? I mean, this other stuff I've seen, you know, those kinds of companies that are on the cutting edge of both the valuation and the world. Can you explain this Caterpillar 2.5% move every day up and down?
No, I can't.
I mean, out of all the places, people should know what a bulldozer looks like, right? I mean, right?
Oh, AI, baby.
Yeah.
AI. But hey, if you want the opposite end of the stick, Michael Burry is—he's short. He may have gotten these stocks right: Micron, Caterpillar, AMAT. What else? Just the stocks index. So, and Nvidia too. But you know what? Just I can't forecast it. But this market is showing resiliency here that is just, you know, and what I found over years is not to fight the trend. This is such a strong trend, and I'm trying so hard not to fight it. So,
well, that's
right. Got a hop.
All right, buddy.
Go blue as always. We'll catch some sports next time. Okay, yep. Chief, thanks for having me on.
No problem. Hey, Carl, so what do you make of that? It is true. I mean, if you sell something, you got to buy something, right?
Do I?
Well, I mean, most people, that's the mentality. You went in.
Okay. Well, I'm here's when I see this kind of instability, my antenna does not tune to the station that says I just dumped my NVIDIA, therefore I need to buy Home Depot.
I'm just saying what clients are saying.
I understand that.
By the way, before I forget,
that's not where I go. Where I go is now over the period of time coming out of the 08 collapse. If the answer was you sat in short-term treasuries, you got a literal zero.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Well, that's we've totally
not so true now, right, Chief?
You're getting a little more. Hey, before we get into the labor stuff, can you explain to me where exactly IBM, which has had an incredible year or two, where do they fit into this mess?
Everybody thinks they're another one of the companies that's in the AI space. Which, by the way, is lunacy.
Well, don't... I mean, I actually have a whole lot of Accenture that I manage for people that have... And the stock has gone from 308 to... What the hell is it? 139. And a lot of what they do, the consulting business, in a lot of these big systems, these big projects, they're essentially competitor to IBM on a lot of this stuff, right? And not in the machines, but in the machines, showing my age, but in the actual trying to get the whole project, IBM, they moved into this service area that was their strength and out of the hardware, and now everybody else in the service area is getting their ass kicked and they're going nothing but straight north.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's still enough in the hardware area and systems area that probably is now... I can't believe their consulting business is any better than these other guys. Do you?
Well, you know,
maybe it is.
One of the tropes that's been thrown out there is that AI is the replacement for expensive humans. Okay,
right.
Essentially. All right, that's been the argument. Whether the expensive human is a computer coder. Or an engineer at Ford. Okay, now, I'm assuming you saw the recent news out of Ford, right?
Refresh me.
Okay, so about a year ago, Ford fired a bunch of gray-haired people like me that did engineering to put together their cars and trucks. Okay? Because the computer was able to do that job for less money, because you only buy the computer once, right? You pay the human every day to show up. Okay. It was a disaster. The machine put together processes that were non-assemblable. Let's put it that way. When you actually tried to build said truck using this, what you got was a big pile of steaming shite.
Yeah.
Okay. So all of a sudden, Ford has to hire those guys back that they laid off. Boy, oh boy, if I'm one of those guys and you do that to me and then you come back and bang on my door, we are gonna have a discussion about salary.
Well, when Pullman canned my ass from downtown, where they moved me to save me, right?
Right.
And all of a sudden, on the consulting firm was working back in the passenger unit where I was, needed a guy who knew all about the stuff down there. I think I was making, I'm guessing that at Pullman I was making $17 an hour. They hired me back at 40.
that has a way of happening when companies do things like that, right?
I had to pay my own hospitalization, but it was like $100 a month back then, so...
There's going to be a very severe reckoning in corporate America. It's starting. It's already happened in a few companies. It's going to happen in many more. And the hype game that has driven this AI trade, I said a couple of years ago, If you jump on board this thing, you're a speculator. You, as long as you're willing to get out of it before it blows up in your face, God love you. But here's the problem. You're not. Nobody's going to ring the bell to tell you. And I have seen this movie enough times. The market goes up, it goes up, it goes up, and then all of a sudden you wake up one morning and it's down 8%. And you're hitting lock limits on the futures.
Well, Carl, they just, the CBOE, I want to make sure we get this labor stuff, but when the CBOE has laid off like 20 or 25% of their people, right, for whatever reason. Then, of course, when it was all done, the lady's name was on top of all the "you're fired" notices. They fired her, the chief of it. You know. But anyway, they get rid of this one guy. I know who he is. He goes to the bar downstairs once in a while. The guy's, I think he's like 60, 61, right? He's been there, you know, 35 years in the IT department.
Right.
I mean, the dude must know something. So they lay him off, and I think they give him a pretty generous package, like 2 years, year and a half. Why not just say, hey, buddy, why don't we plan on you retiring at 63, and we'll give you a half a year then, and then you can be on Social Security, and you can plan to get something else or whatever. What's the point of not paying? He must do something when he walks in there after 40 years of knowledge. What is the mentality here? Are these guys idiots or what?
Chief, there is no mentality when it comes to things like this, but this is the damage this does institutionally among the workforce. The entire precept that there's some kind of a bargain there with employers and employees, it's gone. You talk to people in the younger cohorts and they will tell you there's absolutely, they don't believe a damned word that comes out of an employer's mouth, that absolutely none of it means anything. It's how much money do I get right now? There is no loyalty. There's never going to be any. If somebody makes a $5 better offer, they're out the door. And you're not going to change this for decades. And it's just because everybody has been stabbed in the back like this on a repeated basis. And you watch the guy next to you bleed out on the floor as they drag him out of the building and throw him out. And you're not going to believe a word of it. So that's, you know, there it is. So labor.
Let me inject one more story. You can pile into hell a little bit. When I was chairman of the membership committee for a couple of years, and the lady I worked with was a lady named Judy Deal. Absolutely spectacular person. She did such a nice job, made life easy for me, and we worked. You know, it was the deal was every portfolio or every resume of a new member had to be gone over by a current member, right? So I picked people for my committee, and you always knew the people that you could really count on for the tough ones, right? But Judy called me up every month and she said, "All right, you got to come up. We got 10 routine ones and we got two or three hard ones." Well, of course, the hard ones I would already go through before I parceled them out. I never told anybody that because they were supposed to go through them on their own. But let's just say they'd already been gone through, as they would say in the old days. So I said, "Okay, give this one to this one, this one." And when Eileen Callahan was always my best people, Dave Scatina, or a few I'd give the real tough ones to, people that had business problems and so forth. And then, and she was the head of membership with all that knowledge of all these people, and she also was the corporate secretary, which means when all the meetings, in order to be a board meeting, she took all the notes and had all the history of all these board meetings. And you know, was freaky. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, Carl, but we were there one day, and she goes, "Well, we got to send this guy a letter," and I go, "Yeah, we do. Well, I'll write something up." She goes, "Just talk. What do you mean? Go ahead, just say. What do you want to say?" Turns out she's one of the last people on earth that knew shorthand. "You talk, I'll write." And you know what? Dictating a letter out loud, I didn't know. I had never done that. Yep. That was a skill set. Those old dudes, they would just spew out the letter. They'd shorthand and they'd be done in 5 minutes. Be quicker than AI. Yep. But anyway, I said, "Judy, how about if I scribble something out and give it to you?" I had no idea how to just talk one out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but then she marries this guy, nice guy, and he buys some, I don't know what the hell, he bought some huge farm somewhere. So she didn't really want to leave, but she left. So she gives her 2 week notice. Not one person came in and said, "By the way, where do you keep the notes from the board meeting?" She just left. Nobody even asked her what file cabinet contained which. Nobody cared.
Chief, I had, before I was a wage slave, I had both sides of that experience. In one of them, the firm went out from under me, and I literally was one of the last guys out the door, because they were wise enough to realize that they needed at least one person who could operate a computer network in a building for the people who were still there.
Yeah.
Okay. So as the company circles the drain and gets flushed, as it runs out of money, if you fire the last competent IT guy you have, if he's not laid off when the CEO shuts the lights off and locks the boardroom door behind him, you've got bigger problems, right? So it was myself and one other dude, and his job was maintaining and making sure the phone system worked in the building. Well, needless to say, that's kind of important too. So, yeah, those were, but yeah, we were pretty much like almost at the janitor's level of turning the lights off as you leave for the night kind of thing.
Well, that was a big strength of zero-based budgeting. Who actually would be the person to put the lock on the gate?
Yeah, well, sort of how it was, right? I mean, so I had that experience, but I've also had the other side, which was, a company that, blah, 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 get out of here. Okay, no problem. And on the way out the door, you say, oh, by the way, don't call me. Well, why not? Well, you'll get about as much consideration on me as I got out of you.
All right. Well, let's real quick. Hal probably opine in on this too, but I did a little bit of a review because the stuff you were coming up with on Thursday was so incredible that I just listened. Which is rare for me, obviously. But I went back and looked at this stuff, and I got us with more people. We don't know what they're doing, and then we've topped the number of 2021 with COVID. We've got 112, almost 113 million people, and somehow or another, our buffoons in Washington are not buffoons; they're smart. Somehow came out with an unemployment rate down, and I hear people quoting this rate. Don't they look at these numbers? That rate means nothing.
Chief, you had during the COVID, right at the peak of the insanity was 2004. Okay, that was the top tick number, 14.7% unemployed. All right, you had 104 million not in labor force that month.
I'm looking at the thing I have doesn't have the monthlies. The 2021 was a low tick.
I've got my spreadsheet up.
Okay. It's like 111 million people total not working.
But these are now. Here's the thing. Remember, these are unadjusted numbers. Okay, I don't play this adjusted game. Whatever.
Well, all right. Quick question: if you're looking at the yearly numbers on the Dumbo one that I'm looking at, 2020, 2021, the end of the year numbers can't be adjusted, are they? They must be. The end of the year ones have to be real.
So you'd think.
Well, you'd think.
The only number that does not have a seasonal adjustment on it that runs all the way through is the non-institutional population. It's a guess for 11 months out of the year, and then, as I've pointed out, they rebase it every January off the ACS. So that is one of the reasons that January is a difficult month to try to actually draw conclusions from. The other reason is that, of course, after Christmas, all the people that were seasonal employees get fired. So you have the confluence of two things, one of which is fact-based and the other one of which is the normal seasonal slop that comes in, which makes January a difficult month to try to, to try to come up with things. But the delta in the employed number, there was some in March, but the April number was from prior month, negative 20, almost 22 million, 21.841 on the employed number. So that was the huge firing month from the lockdowns.
Right. Well, okay. Historically here, just to get people on the right page, after 2009, we had a participation rate under 59. Okay, so it got back to 59 in 2014. which it stayed there, high 59s, low 60s, to COVID, when it dropped back down 56, 58. And then we've been back up to the high 59, 60. And now for the first time, we're back at this 59 number, other than those two horrible times, which is not good.
Well, Chief, the 2020-04 spike low was 51.3.
Which one are you at?
2020-04 and 05. 2020-04.
2020. Okay, you've got the fourth. I'm looking at the year. At the end of the year.
I'm talking about April.
Okay, the year was 56.8, but we're down to. But mostly, it's in the high 59-60. If you go way back, it's 62-63 in 2000.
Oh, yeah. And the problem with that number is that, I mean, if you wanted to look at just one figure for the sustainability of the federal government from a standpoint of tax and, you know, from revenue and spending trends, okay, that, and you wanted one number in the labor report that would give you, are we sucking water or are we sucking air when we inhale? Which is it? It would be that figure. Okay. But then we knew
we were in trouble. Now we have people saying we're doing great.
Well, we have a crazy narcissist with a toupee that, he's been compared to a Cheeto by my daughter a bunch of times. In fact, that's her name for him. Here we are. We're under 60, and realistically speaking, what a lot of people don't realize is that every tenth in that number, not whole percentages, but every tenth in that number is about 600,000 employed people with our current population.
Okay, let me. Again, I'm trying to do this not because I'm interrupting, even though I am. We have 169 million people that we claim are either working or looking for work. So that's the employed is 162.
Right.
Looking for work, 7 million. And we've got 106 million that we don't know what they're doing. We're not saying some are students, some are retired. If you run back to these numbers when they were, I'll say, healthy, say in 2000, we had 136 million people working and like 69 not working. I mean, the difference between 63 and 64 and 59 is a boatload of people that are paying taxes versus, not that some retired people pay taxes, obviously, on their investments, but it's a massive difference in tax inflows and outflows, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. But, Chief, we don't, you know, we just don't seem to care about things like this. One of the things that I think is, you know, we hear all this stuff about immigration and about the H-1s and the OPTs and the Haitians and they're eating the cats and eating the dogs and the stuff, right? The Federal Reserve Bank down in Dallas said that essentially a third of your housing cost escalation came as a direct consequence of the illegal immigration that the Biden administration allowed in the last couple of years in his term. And they put actual numbers to it. And so this is both in rent and in the purchase, in purchase costs. Now, if you actually had a labor shortage, you didn't have people that could work, that were the not in labor force number was essentially all people laid up in old folks' homes, right? You might have an argument for throwing.
Carl, where do you put? Maybe this is just. Where do you put the people who? I could probably name 10 families off the top of my head that have somebody who's absolutely able-bodied that has no intention of working ever, to live in somebody's basement. What is that all about? That never happened when I was young.
Well, what it's about is that you are paying people to sit around on their butts. And people, everyone says, oh, this is totally irrational, da-da-da. It is absolutely not irrational. If I can get paid in SNAP and Section 8 and all the free medical care I want, and I can get drunk all day, Look, I had an example of this in my own family, okay? A sister of mine, she drank herself to death, for real, all right? Was towards the end of that, was she incapable of doing a desk job and stuff? Well, yeah, duh. But in the years prior, was she? No. But you know what? When you create an environment where the cost of living is wildly elevated by doing these things, and at the same time wages are depressed, and then you look at the spectrum of people, some of whom are further to the right of capability and intelligence and whatever, however you feel like measuring it, and some people are to the left. It's a bell curve. There's people on the right side, there's people on the left side. If you destroy the opportunity for the people on the left side in terms of their remuneration, and at the same time hand out free money, why would I go to work
family. Well, whatever.
Chief, if my return on investment is negative to get out of the would I do it?
We've talked about that in a ways, but I'm talking about. I mean, if you happen to be got laid off and you're on unemployment, all right, I can understand, I suppose, if all of a sudden you get a job. So I went through this not that long ago, Carl. I think you were on. By the way, we have Hal. Tell him to pop in.
Hey, well, I'm on.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's kind of levels to this, I think, and you know, and I don't mean this is what Hal's good at. I went through. When everybody was, this is during COVID or whatever, if somebody's going to go work for, the minimum wage at the time I think was 15 bucks an hour or something, or 12 or whatever it was, and I went through, okay, somebody...
No, that's a state rate?
Yeah. Well, whatever, just kind of follow the numbers. If Uncle
Joe... Well, the federal is still in the sevens.
Well, the Chicago just went to 17.
Yeah, so it has to be a state rate.
Chicago just went to 17. Anyways, whatever the number I use, I think I use 15, just for laughs. And if for me to get my ass off the sofa, say Uncle Joe buys me gives me $5,000 to buy an old jalopy, which of course you can't do now because they're like 10 or 12, so that argument's gone. But if you take the tax on the jalopy, all right, and... The cost to change the title, the license plates, and what the hell is the other thing? Something else was in there. The county tax, person to person. My first 65 hours of work were going to go to pay for the taxes on this piece of crap car and just get the license on it. That's kind of a lot. A week and a half just to do that? I mean,
Chief, but see, this is...
They're disincentive. What I'm saying is they're disincentive.
The thing that you don't want to do, Chief, is legislate policy that aims to improve people's lives by raising the minimum wage.
I'm not.
You don't need to raise the minimum wage to improve the lives of people.
I'm not going there. Point is that the prices of all this stuff, the prices of getting on the bus, the prices of doing all these things just to get to work.
It's not worth the minimum wage, right? I get it, yeah.
I mean, Audrey, these people were pissed off at the taxes in Illinois, right? So they moved to Indiana. At that time, this is a few years ago.
By the way, are the Bears doing the same thing?
Oh, who knows?
Are they going to stay?
You know what? It's funny.
That's hard to stomach. Yeah,
but you're hero, even though you refuse to say so.
Milton, hey, I'm a Bears fan. I love the Bears in '85.
But I'm saying you're hero, Milton Friedman, even though you refuse to admit it. Yeah. He answered the question that he goes, if...
Pragmatic.
But he said if...
My pragmatism makes me more Milton Friedman-like. Yeah.
Well, somebody asked him about people dumping steel in this country. And he said, you know, we're not talking about somebody being more efficient and just willing to make less of a profit, say, in China. This is back before China was an enemy. And, he goes, if somebody is really going to sell you something that's less than the cost of them to make it, and we're not talking about, you know, executive salaries, he says, buy it from them and spend the money on something else. if they're dumb enough to do that, you know, let them knock themselves.
It's really, if China's doing that, it's really China being at war with its own people because they're forcing their own people to subsidize our low-cost iron.
But what I'm saying is if
that leads to less war because if you have to rely on a country to supply you with iron, steel, you want to be nice to them, so you don't want to make war with them.
Hell.
So it actually fosters peace.
Okay, one of my biggest,
when goods cross borders, troops don't.
When one of my biggest disagreements with you is that people are dumb enough to think up a reason for war if they're sitting in the lap of luxury.
The only reason for war is to enforce monopolies that these governments create.
I think they okay, got it. We want it. Let's see. Anyway, I was trying to go over this with the Bears. If Indiana is really dumb enough to spend $5 billion on a stadium in the middle of a swamp, let them do it. Why would we ever have to match that? I mean, what are we going to do? Say, well, like, remember the Three Stooges auction where they were auctioning against themselves? I don't know if you ever watched the Three Stooges where Mo goes $50 and Curly goes $55 and Mo looks at him.
The key to prosperity is letting people be free. In Cuba, the power grid has all but shut down. In New York, Mondami is turning off escalators and telling people to raise the thermostat to 78. There's no solution for what's causing this. It's not just weather. It's the fact that they shut down power
plants. How do we get from the Bears to here? My point was...
They're regulating the market.
No, if Indiana wants to take Indiana people's money and spend $5 billion in the hope that you and Carl are going to go buy a condominium down in Wolf Lake, go right ahead. What am I supposed to do? I have to come up with six to match that stupidity?
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. I mean, I hope we don't. Anyway, that's my Bear comment.
I think if Illinois was a little more friendly, the Bears probably wouldn't be considering.
All right, okay. You're my inflation guy, right?
Yeah.
All right, so what the Bears want in Arlington Park, they're going to spend way too much for the place. Now, why would you do that going forward? You're my economic theorist. They want essentially...
All I'm saying is if Chicago and Illinois in general were more friendly...
No, don't go there. They want... A stay on
I
the
do not want the state to subsidize these stadiums.
They,
I don't want
they
that.
Want they want the, they want to be locked in on the same property tax rate that they have now, which is unimproved property for the next 30 years. What everybody else is going to go up every year. Screw that. That's a lot. if you think the inflation is going where you're our predictor.
I'm not a big fan of property tax to begin with, because inflation does what?
If all of a sudden this place that they're spending $4 billion on is worth $10 billion because of inflation 20 years from now, and oh, by the way, they're paying 48 cents in property taxes, how much more is it worth?
Well, okay, hold on a minute now.
Property taxes are problematic because the Federal Reserve can print money and you have to pay more in property tax. And if you're
they want a freeze.
Chief.
Well, they want a freeze because they know the Federal Reserve is going to print bunch of money.
But you don't get a freeze.
And they see inflation coming down the pipeline. Hey, if the Chicago Bears can make the argument that property taxes are theft created via inflation, I'm all in favor of that argument.
All right, well,
actually, property taxes are unconstitutional because the 14th Amendment incorporates the Constitution against the states. And for all those people who the Supreme Court decide,
well, hey, you got to remember, Carl, the only tax that people on the left hate is a tariff because Trump imposed.
All right,
other taxes?
What percentage of the rent you think we pay in our offices?
Any taxes. So
okay, I know you don't. But the point is, we're not talking about the theory of property taxes. We're talking about should one firm get an advantage over another firm, and I don't like that.
I don't either. If they're going to make an argument on my behalf, I'm all in favor of it.
They can make an argument all day. I can make an argument that the building we're in shouldn't be paying as much as they are, and oh, by the way, it would cut our rent down. But that's like a fart in church. Nobody listens to me.
Tom, if you want to make that argument that you pay too much in property taxes and politicians listen to that and lower the property tax rate, I'm all in favor of it.
For the rate, yes. For them, not so much.
Hey, I'm in favor of any argument that stands in opposition to property tax because it's a tax.
We're talking two.
It's an unvoted on tax via inflation.
We're talking two different, maybe three different things of the chessboard. You're talking about should property tax be there at all? Yeah. Carl's talking about. I'm with you on that. Okay,
taxes in Long Island mortgage. You're not a owner; you're a renter. Right, you pay rent to the state.
What I'm trying to say here is if you give the government the ability to put these taxes out there. That's where you guys are. Okay. And I mean, I'm not going to debate you on that because you're right. But the point is, and this is why I think this administration, more than most, even though they've all been doing it, if the idea is, and you know, Kevin will say tomorrow that the Pell Grants would be a great idea in Indiana, and he's right about that, by the way. But the idea that you and I, that, you know, three schmoes are looking at stuff coming back from China, if it really is, that we're going to go up and we're going to put our money together, go to the markets, get some investment money, we're going to go to the bond market, and all of a sudden, you know, President Orange comes in tomorrow, or Biden comes in tomorrow and says, oh, by the way, we got some guys from Saudi Arabia coming in, and they're going to invest like a mile from you for the same thing you think you should be doing. And, oh, by the way, we're giving them all this dough. They're not paying property taxes for 20 years, and their state taxes are going to go back to them. Why would we ever try and compete when all these other guys are getting all this crap?
I don't think administration can tell a local government that they can't pay.
They don't have to. The local government does it themselves. They gave John Deere the idea, or one of those guys, Caterpillar or John Deere. There's the state tax that people pay, and there's some of it goes back to the company. There's levels of this lunacy. I'm not saying it's all out of Washington.
Well, there's all kinds of lunacy around the United States. I mean, New York has the Startup New York thing, where if you move or you start a business up on one of their Startup New York campuses, you don't have to pay income taxes for like 10 years.
Well,
or
that's what I'm
you
saying.
Pay a reduced rate.
That's why
there's opportunity zones. There's like 4,000 opportunity zones throughout the United States.
Well, what are the tax incentive districts here? How those things work?
Now, let me ask you a question. If the Startup New York zones work, or the opportunity zones work, or the enterprise zones work, why not just make the whole United States an enterprise zone?
Because you have to be favored. You don't want everybody to be able to do it, Al.
Exactly, right. So this is all about cartelization and
it's favoritism.
And limiting people who can enter the market.
I mean, you know, it's boy, speaking of one of those
things.
By
the way, the Startup New York program, my wife did this senior thesis on it, and we turned it into like three papers, her and I. Well, we did two papers, and I did a third. But yeah, the critics of Cuomo's Startup New York tax scheme claimed that it was a kickback to all of his friends who are developing the real estate for the Startup New York campuses.
You don't think they're going to make a mistake and give it to you, do you?
Yeah, no way. They're gonna give it to friends.
I got a good one. Carl, you'll love this. We got a new client this a few years ago, and he trundles in, you know, good guy, and he's doing some of his own stuff. He's doing some of the Protected Index program, but it's fine. And he says, well, what do I do with this? Now, I'm our municipal bond guy here, right? We don't push municipal bonds or something, but people come in with them. And for us to be able to sell them, you know, somebody like me has to be registered, which I am. And also, if somebody ever wants to buy, you know, those state sponsors, tuition saving programs? You got to be a municipal bond guy to sell those things, even though they're just anyway. So the guy comes in with this municipal.
Well, licensing is a way to limit the amount of competition.
I'm the guy, right? So, but I would never. I mean, if you wanted a municipal bond, we'll get it for you, okay? But we don't really. That's not what our clients do. Anyway, this guy comes in with one, and it's a municipal bond on a TIF area, tax incentive district in Philly. He goes, see if you can sell this. I spent like a week going to every firm I could find. To give me a quote, the bid and offer on the thing was like 45 bid at like 90. I don't think any of them ever traded. Advice to the guy was, just hope you live another 10 years.
Well, Tom, that says something about you, because you know, if you were a snake oil salesman, you probably could have got a better price.
Well, I could have. I mean, I would never do this, but I suppose I could have found another client and said, hey, you want to buy this at 50 cents on the buck? I got some dummy that if I tell them. But I would never do that to anybody. I mean, that's why I'm not, you know.
Well, you're not a snake oil salesman,
no,
right?
But I mean, theoretically, a firm probably would say, we'll pay 60. Okay. You know what? That business, this is how. In my business, well, the stock business, stock and option business, back in the day, if you were in the New York Stock Exchange or someplace, it was so straight, you know, not that guys couldn't screw around the specialists, but every bid was listed, every offer was listed, there was a customer order book that you had to get, you know, they had to trade with you before anybody else. But the Instanet was a like a the NASD was kind of a real half-assed sort of thing where people put bids and offers up there, and if you were say you wanted to sell 1,000 shares of IBM, well, not IBM because that would have been on the New York Stock Exchange, but say IBM, at say 104, or you wanted to sell it. Well, there might be a guy bid 104 for 200 shares, and you had 1,000 to go. I could turn around and sell it to myself at 103.5 or to somebody else, even though there was 104 bid, because they wouldn't buy all 1,000 there, which is, you know, it was so screwed up. When I get to this municipal bond stuff, I'm trying to sell this bond, it's the same way. Guy goes, well, we'll put in a bid for 55, and if we get it, we'll sell it to you at 60. And I go, wait a minute, is this a 30-year flashback? This is still that crooked? What do you mean crooked? Why can't you just offer the damn thing at 60? Oh, no, we're going to bid 55. If we get it, we'll sell it to you at 60. I'm thinking, okay, then. There's still markets like that.
If somebody's offering to buy it at a price, they probably have a seller already lined up to buy it at a higher price, right?
Yeah.
And they're not going to tell you about that.
Well, I mean, they told me, and I go, I'm not using you. But that's what people used to do. If they could buy it cheaper, they'd turn around and sell it to you higher.
Well, people do that all the time in the pawn business.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you would hope that, you know, that's why, you know, it's
kind of sounds like that piece of toast that looked like Jesus. They sold it on, like, eBay.
Yeah.
Or that cane that was attached to a quote-unquote ghost. Well, they sold it for big money on eBay. Somebody bought it.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize, I mean, that when you have, that's why when we manage money for
or,
people.
Or what's his name? Cliff Clavin, had that potato that looked like
God. Well, when people give me stocks to manage for them, you really want, well, you get what you get, but you really want a stock that at least has some liquidity to it.
Yeah.
That's why when we put people in the protected index program, and now there's all kinds of indexes, right? So the client and us will sit down and have a long discussion about which one do you want to be in. Do you want to be in healthcare? Do you want to be in S&P? Do you want to be in the Qs? I mean, could be in the XLE is the oil, but I really try and steer people away from ones that aren't liquid. You unless you do it on a daily basis, like I do, my brother does, and the rest of people here, you don't realize how much you can lose in just the transactions if the transactions are not fluid.
Oh yeah,
and if you're leveraged, it's even worse.
Yeah, well, no, I'm saying
anything. You guys do this all day, but most people don't. Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've done not as much of it as you, obviously, duh, but plenty. And you're absolutely right. The worst nightmare from a stand if you trade in any way actively. Boy, if you're trying to get into or out of something that's illiquid, the reaming you take on that is unbelievable. Yeah. And by the way, that's one of the reasons that I am, in the general sense, I tend to be have a rather jaundiced eye towards real estate. Although obviously, people who can play with other people's money in the property development game, like Trump, see it the other way around, because they hive off each of their projects into a separate LLC. And when one of them blows up in their face, it doesn't touch any of their... You know, they could be 50% in the hole, and they don't care, because it doesn't come out of their hide, right? It comes out of the other guy's hide. But for you, those rules don't apply unless you're running around with $1 billion.
Right, oh yeah.
Right? And so, you know, for the general...
100 years of evolution to create these... market barriers.
Well, the thing is, though, is that, I mean, when it comes to ETFs and things like that, in many ways, the larger, well-recognized ones are a tremendous boon because, if you had to buy 500 stocks to get S&P 500 exposure, right? Not so good, right? That I can just buy the spider and be done with it. Okay, you know, that's fantastic. But then you get all these guys that are all trying to skim this and that and the other thing, but with some efficiency in the market, okay, yeah, you know, there's 10 basis points or 15 basis points worth of difference in expense and fee ratios and things like this, but at least it's a reasonably tight spread, right? It's reasonable. until you get into some of this lunatic stuff. But you know, one of the things, Chief, that I think is very interesting that's happened in the last few days is I'm sure you guys watched this whole Bitcoin saga.
Yep.
And the cryptocurrency stuff. You know, Sailor, and it took a company that was arguably the trigger, although not the cause, of the 2000 blow up. And I've talked about that on the show a few times and some of my writings a few times, and that they had just announced a stock split just before the crash happened in 2000. And then a few days later, after they announced their stock split, they come out and say, oh, by the way, we found some accounting irregularities.
Yeah.
Needless to say, that's not the kind of thing you want to have to, you know, put out there and file a, you know, file an SEC report on, right?
Well, you see these moves and
But that was the day that everyone woke up in fear and mashed the sell button, right? And I was in Florida sitting in the Sandestin Hilton because I was house shopping down there at the time it happened. And I clicked the TV on, saw it on CNBC, and just turned it back off, went to bed. I'm like, all right,
well, here you,
we
you
go.
You can't put yourself in a
situation. The Bitcoin thing is interesting because it kind of coincides with, I have a crazy theory, it kind of coincides with the World Cup.
Well, I think it's
I'm trying to figure out how people can afford $3,000 tickets.
Well, I think it's a leverage indicator more than anything else.
And
what I'm seeing,
but maybe some of it, people are selling a little bit of it to these tickets, because I can't imagine them. They got people there with kids. How do they afford these tickets? My son last night, we were watching the game last night, the soccer match, and he goes, why can't we go to the game? I go, well, it's about $10,000 for us, 6 to 10. That's
right.
We got that kind of money.
Well, you know, the reality the last couple of days is because our esteemed president came out and said he loves Bitcoin.
Oh, of course. Well, yeah. And then the other, and then not all that long ago, he comes out and says you go buy a Dell computer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the level of insanity where you have things.
Yeah,
like
the president should be making those kind of calls.
Well, not only that, but
you stay out of that stuff.
How's he going to make money if he stays out of it?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I don't know about policy and things like that. What I know is that when you have an exemption from the insider trading laws and supposedly.
Yeah, the White House, the executive branch does, doesn't they?
He does. The president does.
Yeah,
the branch itself does not.
I have to be shown where it says that. The president can front run.
I think I looked
says.
It up about a week and a half ago, and I think Carl's right. The president is exempt from this stuff.
How is that worded?
For the most part.
How is that worded?
I think this is like 40, 50-year-old law.
Why did people all these years?
And I think, it was made by Congress, I think, in the 1970s.
Why did people all these years put themselves in, put the stuff in a blind trust? They did it because they were honest, and he's not, or what?
Well, Chief, we've never had chief executives that that do things like this a little bit towards the back door because they're concerned about the political scandal more than about going to jail. All right, I mean, the whole idea of putting, basically demanding that somebody go on the board of an oil company and they have zero petroleum experiences, that's nuts, right? Especially in a foreign country. But the thing
it's not 3,000 trades in a quarter.
No, Chief, I get it, but you know why you do it there, and because you do have a little concern that it's going to show up in the public eye. People are going to look at it. They're going to, hey, wait a minute, what the hell was that crap?
This guy has no concern.
This guy doesn't care.
Yeah, doesn't care.
Yeah, because I think he doesn't care because it's a political thing rather than an illegal thing.
Yeah, I'm just saying he does not give a wet.
I don't.
He doesn't really care what the media.
I don't think for a second that it's legal for him to say something in the Oval Office about something, and his kid picking up the phone and calling his wealth advisor and telling him to buy something. You can't tell me that's legal.
Chief, we live in a world where nobody goes to jail.
Well, that part I get. That part, right. I mean, it's not legal to drive on the shoulder.
No,
yet,
hey,
you know,
Carl, you're wrong. Carl, you're wrong about that. People go to jail.
Well, only certain people.
Sandwich on the subway station, at the BART terminal in San Francisco.
Yeah, only certain people. Yeah. Okay, let me change
They
that.
Go to
only,
jail.
Only certain people go to jail. Yeah. Okay. But here's one of the things that I think is kind of important to, you know, to keep in mind about stuff like this, which is that when you get down to this, remember, the Ukrainian war was ostensibly about corruption by Poroshenko and the other leadership over there. Okay, you know, golden toilets while everybody else is starving, da-da-da-da, you know, this guy's the classical crap.
Yeah, Russia and Ukraine, before the war, they're both like 132 and 133 in corruption index.
Yeah, I mean...
It was
insanity, okay? Yeah. And
they were both considered very corrupt governments.
Absolutely. And we took it upon ourselves, by God, it's our job to go over there and, okay... We fomented that revolution over
in 2014.
Yeah, we did that. All right,
it was a coup.
Our country did that. It is absolutely acknowledged. Our CIA did it with direct support, not covert at the time, not so much now. Absolutely admitted we were responsible for it. Okay, fine. Now you have a war, a real no BS war. That is tearing up two nations as a direct consequence of this. It's been going on for years.
Yeah, it's surprising Ukraine can hang in there with the drone technology. Yes, wow.
And still, you know, still going on. They're still shooting each other.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over here in the United States, we have a president who has quite literally placed thousands of trades on equities that are directly related to parts of his program and parts of his economic agenda.
Well, the kid just bought the company that they gave drone contract to.
Well, duh. Okay, and oh, by the way, one of the latest ones is this thing with Axon, okay, which is the company that makes those body cams, and by the way, the tasers that basically all the federal agencies use. All right, all of a sudden, out of the middle of nowhere, how does his supposedly blind family members know that they're going to make a $200 million purchase from these guys, and therefore I should go buy a couple million dollars worth of their stock. I mean, this kind of stuff is nuts.
Carl, there's a lot of people that are just all in on the guy.
It makes me think I'm in the wrong business.
Well, to get back to the... What
I
do
should
you,
have ran for office.
Well, to get back, we got to go to a break here, but to get back to the part about what do you do if you have one of these... places that don't trade very much.
Right.
One of the things you do, the people who are, they call them the liquidity providers. I mean, there's not much competition. There isn't some of the bigger ones, but there's not very many firms that put these quotes out now. And so it's not like on the trading floor where you could have, 350 people in the OEX pit.
Right.
I'm not saying that the old way with runners and stuff, you could handle the volume today, but you could have been either, when you designed the new system, which, had to be electronic, it doesn't mean you couldn't have people on the floor for spread trades and things like that. You could have done it exclusively or inclusively, and they decided to do it exclusively. But anyway...
Well, that's what all government policy is.
I understand. Well, no, it's government let the exchange become not... Anyway, we'll do that. That's another discussion.
But that's the general
Okay, what I'm trying to get some advice here that we do all the time. If somebody says the market's... this option's $4 bid at 480. What do you want to do? Okay, first of all, you have to put yourself in a position where you're not panicking it. Because if you're panicking, if you're foolish enough to buy spoos in the middle of the night and now they're tanking, you got to get rid of them. You just got to sell them. Okay, I try to never have my clients in that position.
Yeah.
Where if we have puts on a stock and the stock runs down, okay, we're going to try and roll those puts down, which essentially is buying the dip a little bit. Okay, we're going to get longer on the way down, but I don't have to. I have the put. I'm only going to do it at my price, so I can do the right job for the client. But never be afraid if the market's four bid at five, and you want to do something at 440, put it in at 440. Guess what?
Yeah.
They have to show it, and they
right.
don't. They
if
don't. They don't.
If
want,
it doesn't get lifted, it doesn't get lifted.
They don't want you there.
Right.
They want it to be four bid at five. And now, if you're, hey, my client wants to buy 20 at 440, put it up there. We put it up there, and by and large, somebody sees one decent bid, and you're filled. Not every time.
And they get hit. Right,
you get hit.
You get hit.
Because,
right.
You, I mean, don't ever be afraid. But now, regular people don't have the bandwidth to do that. We do. That's right. What we do for people.
You know, one of the things, Chief, here's one of the things that I think is fascinating here is you look at the price of oil over the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, right?
Yep.
And then you go on there on the marine tracking site and you take a look at the actual level of traffic through the Strait of Hormuz and the number of tankers that are sitting at anchor on either side of it. All right, now, those ships are expensive as H.E. Dolphins.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And, yeah. We're not talking about, you know, my little yacht sitting at the dock for, you know, 4 or 5 days because I don't feel like fishing today. That's not how it works with, you know, with ships of that size and crew requirements and everything else. They're not moving.
Aren't the amount of crew on there pretty small? It was like 10 people on those big things.
Well,
they're pretty automated, right?
Yes, and no.
It's not 100 people, but it's not no people.
Yeah. It's not like a Navy ship where you have 500 souls.
No. It's not like a Navy ship that you know you need to.
Or one of those cruise ships.
Yeah, it's not something where you need 1,500.
It's pretty skeleton.
Yeah, you don't need 1,500 people to operate it. Okay, but there's, you know, there's probably 100 dudes on that boat. Okay, or 50 anyway. You need an engineering crew in the engine room and things like that.
Well, you better have some guy there to fix it.
I just looked it up. It's probably under 30. The ultra large.
Hey, how about we go to break here, guys, and we'll continue.
About 25 to 30.
SP futures down 7. NASDAQ futures down 250. We've come back. Gold is way down. It's come back some. We have some movement. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamar, Ricky on the board. SP futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 254. We were down 350 on the NASDAQ a little while ago, so we've come back 100 points. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 1,400. That's over 2%. Hang Seng down 119.5%. And in Shanghai down 51. That's 1.3%. So kind of whack over there. Over in Europe, DAX down 149. That's 0.6%. FTSE up 60.6%. Maybe it's because their soccer team won. Who knows? CAC around up 27.3%. Bonds. Unchanged at 4.49, so we're hanging under this 4.5 number that everybody kind of looks at, but who knows how long we're going to stay there. I don't think we'll stay there that long, and neither does Carl, so when's the last time that both of us have been right? Oil, 48 cents, 69.03. We've got gold, and now it's up 10 bucks. It was down earlier, 41.76. Silver down 19 cents, 62.13. Foreign exchange. Yen, this is the one we got to worry about. We'll try and get our guys to talk about this. Yen pinned near 40-year low in test of Tokyo's intervention resolve. It's at 161.8. It was over 162 yesterday, so they've got it back down a little bit. Now, remember, when you talk about the euro at 114, it's the euro's worth $1.14. Okay, it's our dollar. Now, when you look at the yen, it's the other way around. It's 162 yen to the dollar. Remember, you always got to do the flip side on that one. Crypto, which we were talking about, down 239, 63,517. It's rallied back like 3,000 since Trump says he loves cryptocurrency. There you go. Ricky, what do you got for us, Trappy Weather Sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:40 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 65 degrees right now with a high of 81. Mostly sunny today, and tonight will be clear with a low of 69 degrees. Phoenix is another story, 84 degrees right now with 114, high of 114. Hazy sun and toasty conditions with dangerous heat today. Tonight will be very warm with a low of 90 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe. We're looking at 22 minutes, 36 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook. Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is 39 minutes. Dan Ryan from 1950 is 23 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 is 29 minutes. Let's do sports real quick. Yesterday, Diamondbacks dominated Padres with an 8-0 win. And today we got Cubs play rookies, play Orioles in Maryland at 5:35 p.m. Diamondbacks and Padres play again in San Diego at 8:40 p.m. And finally, at 6:40 p.m., Red Sox at White Sox. For the FIFA World Cup, the United States is officially eliminated from the 2026 tournament after a disastrous performance resulting in a 4-1 loss to Belgium and an early departure in the round of 16. With that, all three host nations are now eliminated from the tournament, and today we got the champs playing. Argentina plays Egypt at 11 a.m. and Colombia plays Switzerland at 3 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
So what do you think? Ricky says a disastrous performance.
Hey, listen, I'll give you my view on it. All right, because I watched it last night. I usually have a run club thing that I do on Mondays, and it's one of the breweries up here. They have a huge Jumbotron, so I could have stayed there and gotten drunk and watched the game. But then, of course, I wouldn't have been able to drive, so I had enough time to get home, and did. There comes a point where you think you're doing well because you're just not playing against the A teams. On the opponent list, okay? You're just not. And then you have a game like last night where very shortly into the first half, an absolutely disastrous defensive decision, mistake, if you will, is made, and you get scored on, which shouldn't have happened but did. So now, you know, you got one in the net. And then that was followed by several more. And here's the thing, though, about soccer, Chief, and a lot of people don't understand this. It is, short of biathlon, it is probably the sport that shows you whether or not you've got the cardio capacity to actually do it, okay? And
those fields are huge.
Well, and there is very little whistle time.
Yeah.
In that you generally...
By the way, why do you think they're really doing the hydration breaks?
Well, commercials.
Commercials. Yeah. Duh. Right, because that's...
You know, I watched maybe 2 minutes of soccer my entire life.
Right.
Until this World Cup. And then I watched, like, the entire third game, the third match, the entire fourth match. And then I watched the entire thing last night.
Yeah, well,
that's the most soccer I've ever watched in my life, and I got a pretty good handle on the rules now.
Yeah, one of the things though that gets and Trump had to stick his face in this whole red card controversy.
I think that might have had a little impact on the psyche of both teams too.
It probably did, but I saw that play live. Okay, yeah. I watched that.
Well, game. I did too. Yeah,
and I saw that play live.
The defender ran into the back of him.
There was absolutely no there was no intent of any kind.
It's like in basketball, Carl, when the defender runs into your back and then all of a sudden you're knocked off balance and then he tried to kick the ball, he kicks the guy's leg, but the guy fouled him first and that foul wasn't called.
Right.
But if you remember, earlier in that match, the same striker, Bulgrim, I don't know how to pronounce his name. He was on a breakaway.
Yeah.
He wasn't offsides. He was onsides. He had the ball. The defender grabbed his freaking arm.
Right.
And still he was able to get a shot off. But as he was kicking the ball, the guy knocked him over.
Yeah.
That is a red card, and it wasn't called.
And it wasn't called.
I don't think that's a red card. But I don't, you guys
it
know.
Is a red card. Because that you're pulling the guy's arm and you're not.
I thought a red
card
was something with intent to injure.
No, the red card
has nothing to do with intent to injure.
A flagrant foul.
Yeah, a flagrant foul.
In basketball, you call that a flagrant foul.
Okay. It was a flagrant foul.
And a flagrant foul that we're not talking. I mean,
in the goal striking area.
Yes, yes.
That's key.
All right, you're also talking about a sport.
If it's out at half, not a big deal. Not as big a deal. But he's on a breakaway, and the only guy preventing him from scoring is the goalkeeper. That's it. That's
well,
a red
we look, card. Look at the difference in the mentality of the sport, and a lot of it is money, of course.
Well, there's so much floppy.
Okay, but what I'm saying is in football, you have 22 people in the field, right? And you've got one, two, three, four, five, six refs, right? Trying to watch every player, like, all the time.
Yeah.
In soccer, you got 22 people on the field, and you got one guy.
No, you got guys on the sideline that are watching.
They can't call a penalty. Yeah. And the object is
right,
the
well, they have, but they have the VAR who should have signaled that there should have been.
If you watch girls soccer at age 12, the minute the ref's back is turned, somebody's shoving somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the whole idea of the sport.
Tom, on that one-on-one with the goalkeeper where he was pulled and then knocked over, everybody's eyes were on.
Who's
that
everybody?
Play.
There's only one ref.
Everybody's. Even the ref,
okay,
his eyes were on that play.
I'm saying, but an awful lot of crap goes on behind the scenes, shoving and doing all kinds of stuff and kicking.
Well, you know, I thought the flopping in the NBA and the WNBA was bad. Man alive, is flopping an art form?
Well,
you
also, my nephew used to play a lot of soccer. He goes, there is flopping, and everybody looks like they've got a broken knee. But everything that happens to you is usually somebody stepping on your foot with a spike. Or something like that, or getting kicked in the shin, where it actually...
Or pretending that they did.
Well, okay, but it actually does... I mean, I played a real lot of basketball. Once a week, your kneecap would go into the other guy's kneecap, and you'd feel like you never walk again for 2 minutes, and 2 minutes later, you're running again. I mean, there's a lot of real painful stuff when people step on your leg. If it's not broken, you get up and run. I mean...
Yeah, when I played basketball, I sprained my ankle so often that when I sprained it, it wasn't a big deal. I could just continue playing.
You lengthened your ligaments.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we've got.
Well, let me just mention one thing on that. Oh crap! What was I going to say?
Well,
I've lost
the. Well, the thing that is weird to me is if it's a really good game, I'm getting to the point where I kind of enjoy watching it, but I didn't get. If Argentina and France didn't get help from the ref, neither one of those were going to get by those crummy teams.
I know, yeah.
I mean, France got the one penalty. That was it. But they had like one other shot on goal.
Look at the Mexican-English game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was spectacular.
The guy got a red card. Now, as a basketball player or a football player in high school, I have done this before. You got a guy that stupidly goes to the ground to hit the ball. His leg gets caught on top of the ball. The Mexican defender or player is behind the play. Of course, the guy's going to run through that, hoping the spikes end up in his calf. I've piled on to plays in football and basketball. I've tried to fool the official into making a call.
Why does that not surprise me?
Yeah. Well, as a freshman, I'd always slap my thigh when my fellow post player, Patrick Toller, would turn and shoot. I'd slap my thigh at the moment he shot to draw the whistle from the official. So if I'm the Mexico player and I'm down a goal and I see a guy stupidly on the ground with his ball with his foot stuck on the ball sliding, I'm going to run through the play hoping that the foot hits my shin so I can draw a red card. That's what I'm going to do. And I think that's what happened in that play. And I don't think a guy should get a red card for being stupid.
Well, I mean, the difference between a penalty where the other team just gets up and kicks the ball and being out for two games is quite a difference.
But again, you're talking about a flagrant foul, which is what was called on him, and that clearly was not.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, but I'm saying some of the stuff where guys get whacked and all they do is
end up on his ankle.
Some of the stuff where guys get whacked, they pick up. I'm saying there's considering, basketball or football, there's a million plays, right?
Yeah.
But soccer. When you're out there for an hour, almost 2 hours, and one goal makes the difference, one call is a big deal. I mean,
A red card. Yeah. Oh, yeah. A red card is basically six fouls all in one.
Yeah.
Worse, you play a man down for the rest of the game. It is crazy.
Well, it's like a permanent penalty box in hockey.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's essentially, yeah.
And it carries over to the next game.
Yeah.
You get to replace him in the next game.
Him, but you don't have access to him.
Right, but he's out, guaranteed. Yeah. And it can be more than one game. FIFA can extend that, but it's a guaranteed suspension for one game.
I think it should be more like lacrosse. He's out for 3 minutes or something. I don't think the whole game is a long time.
Well, the soccer is a funky game, but the bottom line is that from a standpoint, what I saw last night, the initial goal was a mistake. Okay,
yeah.
it was stupidity on the defense, And it got
capitalized. They're playing really tight. You can tell they're playing really tight.
Yeah, but it got capitalized on, and that's what happens when you make a mistake.
Well,
Belgium
was playing for blood because they're upset about the red card being revoked.
Oh yeah, they were pissed.
Pissed. You could tell. They were motivated. There was no pressure.
You
on
think
them at
people
all.
In Europe are motivated to play hard against us right about now?
Oh, well, they want to beat the United States.
Well, yeah.
Here's the headline. Bitcoin rebounds after Trump says he's become a big crypto guy.
Okay, so you know, I know you and is he? Well, gee.
Well, you know, the World Cup is over. Nobody's buying tickets anymore, so maybe
he made how many million dollars last year in his crypto? Because he gets
Now hang on a minute, Chief. I would be all right. Now I've called this thing Bitcoin since it started.
Yep,
right?
I'm with you.
But if I set up a meme coin, and it lost 99% of its value, okay, the aggregate losses among the people who traded it were in the $1 billion range, and I wound up $600 million to the good because I got all the exchange fees, plus I got to sell into everybody else's purchases because I'm the guy that set it up, so I got the initial stash at no cost. I think I'd be a pretty big supporter of this stuff too.
Well, plus, but as long as he hates the people you hate, it's okay. Hey, while we're talking here, you guys have been. Now, this is a several week, several month, maybe several year situation on the deficit, and all you guys come at it, you guys, the Bodhi is, coming at it from different directions, which is terrific. I mean, Hal looks at the money supply stuff more in the bank stuff, and Carl looks at, you know, a lot of the deficit that leads to that and so forth. I'm seeing this, again, the 30-year is trying to creep through this 5% and the 10-year 4.5%. Right now, TYX is 5.009, and the 10-year is 4.49, so say 4.5. Is this time the charm? Are we going to keep creeping through, or what are we doing here?
Okay, Chief, you're looking at this from the wrong angle.
Well,
I'm just telling you
what they're trading.
Well, I understand that, but you're asking the question in the context of the last 30 to 40 years worth of trend. That's over. There are going to be times during the next 30 years that rates will go lower, but the overall trend is from the lower left to the upper right of the chart.
Yeah, it's a normal yield curve.
By the way, that's the opposite of what the last four decades have been.
I understand.
And that is the
yield curve looks normal to me.
Yeah, but that
anchored
is
anchored by the federal funds rate.
I understand that, but that is the most important thing to keep in mind, because what that means now is that the only way for you to reliably make a profit in any company, I don't care what the business is cash on cash return, not ignoring financing cost, not using financing. And if you can't do that, you're going to get buried. Not immediately.
If you can borrow at 2% and inflation's 4%, even we can make money.
Chief, when you have a general move from the bottom left to the upper right, corporations don't pay off those notes. That 2% note is a 4% note 5 years from now when it matures.
Or let me ask.
You either have to have the principal to pay it off. You have to be able to absorb the additional 2% in your operating margins, or you're out of business.
All right,
well, an upper sloping yield curve signals a strong economy, in my opinion. I'm not sure.
All those kind of old things.
I know, but
you have to throw out the window, I think.
What a high yield says, it tells all the people with these crackpot ideas that, hey, you know, maybe that idea isn't worth financing.
Well, yeah.
So those malinvestments don't get created. They don't get started.
Well, yes and no. Hal, you're looking at this in the context of the today, you know, the shape of the curve today.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're right in that is, you know, that is what the signal tells you, right? I mean, you look at what
it's what historically has told you, but I don't think it works necessarily. Whatever.
It's told you that for the last 40 years, but that's the world we've all been living in for the last 40 years. And I mean, I grew up and you know, as it turned and this began, I began my adult life. So my entire adult earning life, this is the world I've lived in. That world no longer exists. And that you had better get through your head, whether you're in a business or whether you're from your personal perspective, because if you don't, you're going to get buried.
Right. There's two things going on here, in my opinion. Now, you guys, I know Hal will argue with me on what I say, but that's okay. I have confidence in you. Two things are going on. One is what you guys are talking about, the shape of the curve, and the fact that the gross numbers are essentially going higher. I mean, even the three of us are going to agree on that. What I look at is, which is weird, only because I started with this stuff, I still go back to somewhere on the blackboard in Hal's class, there's going to be an equation that says the nominal interest rate is equal to the real interest rate plus anticipated inflation, which has been an identity that's been around forever. And it's simple as can be. What are you actually charging me to use your money? It's not mine. I need it. I'm building a building. I'm doing something. It's just like buying concrete. It's just like buying steel or toilets, for God's sake. That number through history has been 2.5 to 3.5, depending on the demand for money and how many good ideas are out there and supply of money. Also, I'm not going to lend you my money at 3% if we all know at the end of the year it's going to be worth 10% less. I want that 10% plus the 3% for the money. It makes absolute sense. Well, I think since really the mid-80s, certainly since 2000, that somehow or another, because of the Fed, because of jawboning, because of a bunch of presidents that didn't pay, whatever it was, some people have been able to borrow way less than that number. Not the rest of us on credit cards.
Oh, no, Chief,
but what I'm going to say, I'm sensing that maybe that is now changing.
No,
am I right or not?
But for the wrong reason.
Okay.
The reason that that certain people have been able to do this is because they don't ever pay it off.
Well, that came after being able to do it in the first place. Didn't I'm saying right now?
No! Stop! What would lead you to believe that you could get away with such a thing? And you say, well, that's corruption. That's a Federal Reserve.
I'm saying keep it simple for a second.
I'm keeping it simple.
The 30-year rate is 5% right now. It just got there. Okay, let's say the real rate is 3. All of us know that the inflation is not 2. And yet still somebody's able to borrow at 5. That number right now should be 7.5 or 8. But it hasn't been for 25 years.
Right. But
well, it's because of all the monetary interventions in the marketplace.
Okay. Here's if you take a look, if you go on the Fred, I put this up in a post about a week ago.
Oh, by the way, I just dropped what I monitor.
I see
in the chat.
Yeah.
It's the dynamic yield curve, and it shows how the Fed uses yields, plays the yields like an accordion. It squeezes
a conclusion here. My conclusion is, for the last 25 years, the real rate of interest for the people who can access it has been negative.
Yes. Here's the problem.
Whoa, we agreed on that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But
it's been negative, yeah.
For about the last 20 years.
But for the three of us, not so much.
But just think about Bank of America, man.
Now, here's
the problem. Go ahead. Carl, go ahead. You got the floor.
Okay. The reason that has been possible, the reason that happened, is because the Goldmans and the Trumps of the world, along with a handful of others, don't ever actually pay the debt off.
Well, yeah.
They always roll it over.
And they can't, because the value of their properties and their rents go up.
Hold on a minute. You're right, Hal, but why? And the reason is this. When they go to roll it over, the rate in the market today is less than the rate that was in the market 5 or 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
All right? The general slope of that curve has been from the upper left to the lower right. It's a cycle. The problem that people get this idea that, well, this is a permanent change. No, it's not a permanent change. These cycles have been every 30 to 40 years, they reverse and go the other direction.
Well, if you're 25 years old, it seems permanent.
Well, okay, exactly, Chief. This is why people get blown up when it shifts and goes the other direction. And it has happened many times throughout the nation's history. All right? It's not hard to find this data. And we have, when we started to see this go the other way, twice now, the Federal Reserve and the federal government have tried to step on the end of that cycle. The first one was after 2008. And yep. Ben Bernanke showed up in front of Congress and said at the time, I can manipulate this. I can essentially give you negative real rates below the rate of actual inflation, below the rate of deficit spending within the federal government. However, it has a use-by date, and you will run out of the capacity to do this and absorb it in about 10 years. Well, about 10 years later, the cycle started to turn.
Yep.
And how do you know that that cycle inexorably had turned? Because interest expense at the federal level went vertical.
We got a dash guide, but next week, Ricky, do me a favor.
Oh, by the way, Tom, did you see the chart I put in the chat?
Well, I will in a minute. I've been talking to you guys.
Yeah, I looked at it, yeah.
Hey, Ricky, make a note, will you? Just put something down there. Chief, remember credit card rates or something, and I'll remember it. I want to ask you guys, and I don't know who else I can. You're the best at this. I did a thing, and I threw it out or something. I don't know how I did with it, but from the time where rates went from whatever down to 1% during COVID, I took a 10 or 15 year analysis of those Fed funds rate, and during that period of time, credit card rates actually went up, and I
That's
wanted
because they have a monopoly on charging.
Okay, but I'm saying next week let's tear that apart a little bit. I would expect them to be sticky because they have a monopoly. But if you listen, every time the Fed lowers the rates, they haven't done it in a while, some cadre of buffoons on TV will tell you that means your credit card rate, they don't go down. They never go down.
They
go,
yeah, they mean, go down. But, right.
I'm agreeing with you, Hal, but yeah. how you pull that off is, I want to know how the hell they pulled.
No, Chief, where do you think?
Let's do it next week.
Where do you think the value of these stocks came from?
I understand. What I'm saying is, you know, more of a detail. How exactly do you pull that off? I mean,
it's called a cartel.
Oh, okay.
And it's illegal.
push this to next. I'm saying,
Congress made the banking cartel legal. They made it legal.
I know that.
USC applies to them. I'm sorry.
All right. What I want you guys to answer, because you have the knowledge, if I can just drag it out of you, I can understand how when the rates for the good people go from 6 to 1, that the credit card rates are not going to go from 18 to 12. I'm not that young of a coyote here, for God's sake. I know that because it's a cartel. The fact that they actually went up, I'm kind of stunned at. It's the degree that they were able to pull off. I'm not arguing with you guys that, cartels get to do stuff. I just would never have guessed they would have the stones and the ability to raise them.
Chief,
people expect high interest rates.
Just answer this question. How many hospital administrators have gone to prison for raping the American consumer out of $2 to $3 trillion a year?
Carl,
the answer is zero. So why do you think Goldman is afraid?
We got to go.
Yeah. But Carl, real quick, that is a result of it being a cartel.
Duh.
Okay.
So why do you think Goldman would be concerned about getting arrested when they do the same thing?
The question I'm asking is not that what you're talking about is exactly how it plays out, but I'm saying is if you got football, it's a cartel. All right, nobody likes football.
Oh, it's cartel too.
Okay, I can see where the price of tickets are $100 when they should be $80. But they're not $1,000. I'm saying there's a matter of degree here that I'm kind of stunned about. You know what I'm saying? Let's talk about it. I mean, if all of a sudden the bear tickets were $1,000, you'd say even regular people would go, what the hell's that?
They wouldn't have anybody at the game.
But I'm saying the idea where you have people.
A monopoly can't price beyond the
Okay. That's what I want to talk about. Even monopolies. Matter of fact, Milton Friedman, Carl's buddy, even though he doesn't like him, said one day that if he could clone himself for 2 weeks, he could do a big study, or maybe it was a month, he'd love to do a study on cartels versus monopolies, because he actually thinks monopoly prices are better than cartel prices.
You know, there might be an argument there.
Yeah. Well, S&P futures down 14, NASDAQ futures down 320. They went all the way back to only down 250, but now they're coming back the other way again. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks. Guys, it was great today. Ricky, nice job.
That's all, folks.